Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
God of War is garnering rave reviews, especially for its scope, polish, and combat. And those are cool things, but they are rarely the first elements I look for in a satisfying game experience. I worry that a little bit of me will always be contrarian and going into well-loved, you know, respected AAA games with a bit of a chip on my shoulder. I'm not actively looking for things to dislike here, don't get me wrong, but when the hype gets to a certain level, I can't deny it puts me in that space. I don't love what that says about me, because I'd like to come at a work with context, yes, but also to give everything large and small a fair shake. Now, that's actually something I wrote on the site this week in a piece titled The Joys and Sorrows of Getting Hyped for a Video Game. I am Danielle Riendo, and this is Waypoint Radio, episode 151. Joining me today are Rob Zachney.
Hey, everyone.
And Patrick Klepek.
Hello.
I thought it might be interesting today to talk a little bit about hype and your relationship to hype and how it either messes with your head or helps you enjoy something or, you know, kind of gets in the way of certain types of game experiences. And this is all sort of around the idea that God of War is, you know, Patrick, you wrote a review, and it sounds like an awesome game. Sounds like a lot of fun. We talked about the game itself last week, but I'm kind of sitting here after a week of hype, excited to, you know, pick up my GameStop pre-order tonight. I did that this time. I'm going to go at, not at midnight, because they thankfully are like opening at 10 or something for it. And I'm going to get that game and I'm going to sit down with it and I'm going to try not to be like a piece of shit and just look for things to pick at and like actually enjoy the game. And I don't know if I'm a, you know, ridiculous person who goes into experiences that I've heard are really positive and like in that mindset and kind of have a little bit of that.
I don't know how you like don't go into like massively universally praised experiences kind of like preparing to be let down, because, and I think actually you're maybe even more likely to be let down if you completely buy into the hype and you're expecting something that is absolutely like every bit as transcendental as a lot of reviews and reactions have made it seem. So, I mean, I think particularly in our line of work, you learn very early on to be very wary of games that are universally beloved, just because after a point, it's not even necessarily about the general consensus that something is good. It's that there's this like universal feeling that it's great and therefore you need to have a great experience too. And I think maybe like preparing to criticize or tear something down is a way to guard against that, right? Like it's just a mechanism for making the experience of encountering this thing more interesting than is this going to confirm my preconceptions of it or not?
Yeah, that's definitely fair. I want to ask Patrick, were you hyped for the game before you played it? Were you excited for it?
Yeah, like I'm a huge fan of the series, generally speaking. You know, it's a series I had a lot of problems with and, you know, things of that nature. But I like playing God of War games and I liked the fact that they were trying to take a more serious tact. Like everything that they were lining up for the game was the kind of thing that I look for. But you know, it's tough because like our relationship with like hype is fundamentally different than the average consumer or player or gamer or however you want to characterize it. Because you know, I've chatted with Corey Balrog like several times, you know, in the lead up to the game. Like I've seen curated behind the scenes presentations about the game, which is like different than, you know, sort of the average person. And then, you know, we try to check our own hype, as critics, because that's like, you know, you do as much as you can to go into something with, sort of as clear an eye as you can. But I, you know, as someone that likes to play things and watch things and read things, when they come out, like it functions on two different levels. One, as I've mentioned on this podcast before, I just like being part of the conversation as the conversation is happening, especially in an environment where it happens at a faster and faster pace. And so if you're sort of not there at day one, it's a lot harder to participate in that conversation because things just move on to the next thing incredibly fast. And two, if you're there at day one for something that you're interested in, you have a better chance to sort of set your own expectations, to go into it with fewer preconceived notions. With games, I don't tend to find myself whipped up into things because I've been doing this long enough that I know what I like, I know what I want, and often if a game is universally praised, that doesn't mean a lot to me. It means like the people I know and trust, like the people that I like go to as sort of a barometer for, hey, what is your take on that game is actually the one I'm paying attention to. So if a game is universally praised, that tells me, oh, that's worth paying attention to, in the same way that we're doing Fortnite, right? Like eventually that game's popularity said something to us, which is like, oh, like maybe we're missing something here. Maybe we need to check this out. And often, so if a game comes out of the gate with lots of really exemplary reviews, it at least tells me, oh, I want to pay attention to it. But I find myself getting lost into hype cycles like more in like mediums that I don't cover as a critic. It's where I discover why people do it. Like, yo, I am hyped as fuck for Infinity War next week. Like, I could not, you know, I got it, the 8 o'clock showing, I'm rewatching movies, I'm reading all these speculative articles. Like, I am so fucking excited for that movie. And I'm going to be there right when it opens, so I can, you know, however I feel about it, like, will be largely based on, like, my own interaction with it. But, like, Marvel movies and stuff like that are where I get to feel that, like, hype indulgence. Like, I'm just swimming in it because I want to be part of the fun and whipping myself into a frenzy before that movie comes out.
You're touching on something really interesting there, I think, which is the whole, like, your own reaction versus sort of the conversation as a whole shaping your reaction, which I think is like a really super valid thing, right? Like, it is really comforting to see something right away and be like, no, I actually thought what I thought. It wasn't that I read, or even not even read, because you don't even have to read stuff. You just have to be on Twitter and see like 400 memes and 400 other things that you're not even trying to look at. And you already have kind of an opinion about the way something is and the way it has affected people. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Rob, are you super affected by this as well, whether in games or even in movies as well?
Yes, I think so. It's hard for me to quite parse out. Like, I remember a while ago I was talking to Evan Narcisse on Idle Weekend, and he was talking about how he basically like goes into media blackout for stuff that he's reviewing and like assessing critically. And it's only after like he's done with a thing and he's sort of put his own thoughts in order and put them down somewhere that then he goes and checks what other people are saying, which is, I admire that discipline a great deal. And I worry a lot about my impressions really being overly informed by what some of the early reactions and critical takes are. At the same time, I routinely breach that rule. and I find it really hard to stay away from that stuff. And actually, in a weird way, I often find the more I hear about something in advance, maybe the happier I end up being about it. Because then two things are going on. One is that I'm hearing a lot of points of view on it, and somewhere in there I'm starting to get a real impression of what the thing's going to be, not some idealized vision of it. But then the other aspect of it is, now when I'm finally like assessing the work, I'm also sort of part of this larger conversation that I've been following for a while, and now I get a chance to sort of have these different viewpoints bouncing off the object. So I'm susceptible to it. I worry about it, but at the same time, like, I really like following the conversation and having the conversation sort of inundate my own preconceptions.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, we mentioned this when on Monday when we were talking about God of War, and this is a piece that I want to write next week once God of War is out. But it's you know what Evan does, and which is what a lot of game critics do, or probably a lot of critics, is like to try and put your feelings down on something, get that out there, then go read what other people have to say. And I wrote that I tend to do that when I am being assigned like a quote unquote review. I don't do that at all when like I'm writing like a critical essay or something that's coming out after the fact that isn't supposed to function in the realm of review. And the point I was making on Monday, Rob, was that I hate not hearing other people's opinions because I constantly find that my own narrow interpretation of a game isn't necessarily where I end up landing later once I've heard other people's takes or interpretations. Like one of the prime example I used was Bioshock Infinite, which is a game I came out of myself thinking, wow, I really liked that and a lot of what it did, and then read about it and went, oh no, like I wasn't like, no. And like, it's not a case of like, not trusting my own like feelings and reactions. It was more just like, other people like contextualizing events, like looking at things from different lenses, like informed my sort of like later, my more formative opinion of the work. And I like that process. Like I like participating in the evolution of opinion on a game, or anything, or a movie or whatever. It's a complicated dance when you're talking about hype and reviewing and all the things that kind of go into that.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
No, I was just wondering, do you also think there's an element of, like, a lot of times when people are looking at sort of the Rotten Tomato system, for instance, and it says, like, 98% fresh or something like that, and then everyone's like, come on, is this really 98? Like, how is this movie really that good? And I think that something that can be distorting is that almost universal acclaim does sometimes look like there's a massive echo chamber, and 100% that sometimes is very, very true. But at the same time, what's interesting there is a lot of these systems are just saying that something is moving more viewers than not to say like, yeah, this is definitely like worth a look, worth your time. And I think it's easy to sort of get carried away when you see like a ton of people having a positive reaction to something, thinking that the number of people having that reaction somehow indicates that everyone is saying like, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, right? This is a masterpiece. And I definitely am guilty of that as well. Like I think sometimes positive reviews bring out my really contrarian asshole side, and I view it almost my job. So like, for instance, there's a thing that happens on like Board Game Geek. Like I know for a fact this happens. People will start like giving games really trash reviews just to bring the average down to where they think is appropriate for where the game should actually be in terms of like the review scale. And I feel like I sometimes sort of end up approaching popular things that way where I'm like, look, yeah, this is good. Everyone likes it. But it's not that good. And it falls upon me to set everyone straight somehow and tell them that thing they like, they shouldn't like as much as they do.
I get like this, and we all know, when I feel like people haven't paid enough attention, like in the opposite way of like people did not like Prey enough.
I knew this was going to be about Prey. Yeah.
Yeah, of course you did. you know, it's just like, why are you playing whatever, this other game, this pile of flaming turds, when you could be playing, Arcane's greatest gift to humanity, Prey? Like, I just don't understand. And I definitely have that, like, I understand and I'm working on this. I definitely understand that. Like, this is me as a 7-year-old kicking my dust around my feet, you know, being like, I don't understand why they don't like the good thing and they like the bad thing. And it gets like very fangirl, nerd, and gross. And like, yeah, okay, this is a thing I need to actually work on in my life. But there is also this like gross sense of loyalty to a product. Well, that I hate about it, and it feels like, oh, okay, Ready Player One, Danielle version. Like, there's a bad road that this kind of comes from, right? And I kind of want to, like, nip it in the bud to some degree, if that makes sense.
I don't know when we all started internalizing the logic of, like, voting with your dollars and, like, the market is the final arbiter of, like, what is good and popular. Like, yeah. From the perspective of, like, people whose job it is to make stuff, obviously, like, the popularity of things is going to be a really key indicator. But it does sort of get inside your head a little bit where it's not, to a degree, everyone gravitating toward the blockbuster title, to the like mass appeal, you know, popular mainstream hit. It is hard to see that happening and not sort of be sitting there sweating bullets and thinking about like, oh no, but what about my thing? Like, I need some of you to come and support my thing because otherwise I might not get any more of these. And so there is an element of like, it can feel, and I think sometimes the conversation around Marvel movies is this way as well, where it's like, these are like really tall, thick trees in some ways, like sort of killing off, nothing can grow in their shade, right? And that's sometimes how it feels, is that like, okay, these things are getting too popular, and it's actually going to reduce some of the diversity that I've come like accustomed to, I've become accustomed to and really value in this space. And then you start panicking and you start hating the thing and the people who like it because they're not buying Prey. They're not buying Dishonored, right. That kind of thing.
Yeah. It's a weird thing to contend with, right? Like it's, I know where it's coming from. I just don't like it and I don't want to do it anymore. It's this sort of like, Team Jacob or Team Edward sort of thing. Like, oh, you've got to be on a team. You have to do this weird sort of group thing or else you're not even playing the game, man. You're not even in it.
It's fun to root for a team, though. Like, that's also part of it. Like, being on a side is enjoyable, right? Like, I mean, this is, like, a pretty fundamental, you know, for better or worse, often for worse, part of, like, core to humanity and a lot of society is picking a side. And so I think that's often, you know, the tribalism that we see reflected in our politics, like, not big shock that, like, that's also reflected in, like, the brand identification and consumerism that mingles in video games. You know, go to any forum or Reddit thread and you'll see plenty of that. Like, a lot of, like, the cheering for a Metacritic score, like, going up a point, like, is part of that tribalism and that we are right and this game is the good game, the all game. And I mean, I a lot of that is very toxic. I think, as a whole, it is a net negative. But I also understand like how people find themselves on one of those sides of the fence.
You want to put on a T-shirt that says team and then whatever. I understand.
Yeah, why do I hate the Packers? Like, I mean, because they fucking suck.
Because they're a better organization.
Shut up, Rob.
I mean, I'm just saying, man. Like,
I didn't ask your opinion, Rob. I was expressing my thoughts. You can have your turn.
Hate for the Packers is merely rage that should be directed at the McCaskies being like diverted toward an unproductive source. The McCaskies are the real enemy. Anyway, point is, Chicago sports detour over.
That's all right. I mean, you can have one. I think it's allowed. Austin's not here, so it's fine. You know,
whatever. His team won the Super Bowl. Get out of here.
I know. I know. He's exactly. He can take one for the team for a minute. What I'm interested in as well is talking about games that have done this in your past. And Patrick, you mentioned BioShock Infinite, which is another one for me for sure. Something that I was hyped on, and then maybe it didn't live up to that hype, but. I think what happened a little bit with Mass Effect Andromeda not too long ago, that game sure was hyped to hell, being part of a franchise that I think was pretty much beloved, not universally, but, you know, close pretty to. well well-liked, I guess we can call it.
Beloved is, yeah, best fact.
Yeah, all right, beloved. It was beloved. It's a beloved series. And there was a chapter that just didn't live up to kind of the hype in a lot of ways. And I think people treated that game like a punching bag. I mean, we did too. Like, to be fair, we definitely did a video that was about the teeth and how bad the teeth animation sort of looked.
But we felt bad about it.
We
Patrick
did,
wrote
you know,
thing about yeah, how yeah,
the
yeah,
piece was certainly, I think the headline was something along the lines of, this is probably not the conversation BioWare wanted people to have about Mass Effect, and was in largely sympathetic to BioWare or, you know, the folks that worked on that project. But, you know, ultimately that game seemed bad. So, but it was bad for reasons that had nothing to do with the teeth animation.
The animation. Yeah. Yeah, necessarily. Or just like a few animations looking pretty crappy. But it very much became hype that turned into like a virus. It was like a virus of a hype virus. I don't know. Expectations were high. And then obviously people saw early footage and it didn't look great. And then it became, there was a hate campaign, of course. And then there was the sort of backlash against how unprofessional it looked. And then that went to some other places. And that, for me, feels like a really instructive version of hype kind of going wrong in a lot of ways. And of course, the like perennial example always is something like Duke Nukem Forever, where nothing that they could have possibly done could have lived up to 10 years of people making a game, right? Like, it's just, there's nothing you can even do at that point. The hype or even just the story or the narrative around something will always be more interesting than whatever they made.
Yeah, that's why Valve can never actually release another Half-Life
game.
Or if they do, it's not going to be called Half-Life 3 because there's just no, at this point, like, yeah, it's the same thing. Like, what could you possibly do? What possible gameplay thing could you come up with that would live up to people's expectations, especially now that the story, you know, like for episode 3 got leaked out last year. So at this point, people have sort of the resolution. But yeah, I mean, morbidly, I'd like them to release it because I just find it interesting when people, you know, studios do narrative continuity and find ways to close out the stories they've been telling. But yeah, that's absolutely a case. Like, of course, I'd rather get, if I had to choose timelines, like I'd rather have Half-Life 3 had come out over Duke Nukem Forever. Although I played Duke Nukem Forever, I beat that game. I had to know. I loved Duke Nukem 3D. Evil Dead quotes, or rather Army of Darkness quotes, were extremely my thing when that game came out. So, yeah.
Good. Well, I'm glad you played Duke Nukem Forever. I'm glad somebody did.
I mean, glad is a stretch. It was, I did it.
Good. Very, very good. And yeah, Patrick, you've written about your love of long-running franchises as well, and sort of like how that in itself is always interesting, like coming up with an excuse for like retreading a plot and retreading with characters being its own version of hype and its sort of own version of why something exists is interesting in itself. And I definitely agree with that. Also, just because you get weird things happening, and I'm generally a fan of seeing weird things happening in various franchises. Rob, I'm curious if you have any other games that were, you know, you were really hyped for, or the hype really sort of ruined your experience. Either or, and maybe even both. It might be one of the same.
I don't know. I'm trying to think. It's tough because I this is a really difficult question to answer as like a games critic, because I get to play stuff mostly early or when it comes out. And so, like, for me, like, what I find more curious is like that, the whiplash effect that you mentioned with Mass Effect Andromeda. That happened extremely quickly. That was that game before it had officially been released. It was when it was in the EA Origin Access or whatever their program is called. That's when everything started turning on that game before it was even available fully for sale. Bioshock Infinite, I mean, that game got all sorts of Game of the Year awards. Like, that game was universally praised when it was released and was seen as a capital A good game. And it wasn't until, I don't know, I would say like it took roughly a year before like the worm turned on it in a way that if you bring up Bioshock Infinite now, at least in like some circles, like it is thought of that Bioshock Infinite is by default a bad game as opposed to the other way around. And so that, I mean, obviously there are people who are commenting on that game right from the gate saying like, ah, here's, you know, what's the problems that it has. And, you know, some of the fucked up stuff it has to say about race and class and things of that nature. But that took time before that sort of like narrative started sticking. And that happens at different paces for different games for different reasons. Like BioShock Infinite is interesting because the critics and players were generally in agreement when it came out. And then like a certain set of critics like started kind of like picking away at that game over time and turning sort of a general sense of that game among, again, certain circles. Whereas Mass Effect Andromeda was critics hated it and players hated it. So like it flips immediately. And the difference between BioShock Infinite and Mass Effect Andromeda is the way that Mass Effect Andromeda was immediately gif-able, right? So it's like the hype was able to, the marketing hype was deflated immediately because players were given agency in debating and talking about the game. And they were like in the world of Twitter, Tumblr, Reddit, and the proliferation of GIFs and sharing short fucked up videos pointing out like what's wrong in animations. Like that's how narratives take hold so much faster in 2018 because the tools, I mean, part of this is like that there are more, there's a democratization of tools, is that like there are like players have the ability to spread their own thoughts on a game faster than the gatekeepers of the past, which was largely folks like ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Rob, is there ever been a game that really, like, you got super hyped for and it was not up to snuff? Or hype kind of ruined your experience with something?
Oh. Total War. Always Total War. But, like, it's...
Okay.
I mean, like, the Total War series is just an emotional roller coaster in general. Like, I remember probably the last time I really got swept up in hype around a Total War game was Empire Total War. Literally in the days before it came out, the forum I was on, people were starting to post their favorite books about, like, the age of Horse and Musket, that kind of stuff. People were posting clips from, like, Barry Lyndon and stuff just to get people fired up to command lines of redcoats, you know, marching into lines of white-coated Frenchmen. Sounded great. Sounded like 100% what I wanted. And I sort of rushed out to get that game and spent probably 2 weeks really convincing myself that I loved this game. like, I would see things that were, like, egregiously wrong in the game. Like, I would leave fortresses that were critical, like, completely undefended with the AI right next to it. And the AI would do nothing because it didn't know how to play its own game. And I was like, aha, they're playing this one pretty safe. They must be concerned. Like, I was basically rationalizing, like, entire lines of thought that the AI could not have had to explain why they were not doing the patently, like, obvious good move in front of them. And then after 2 weeks, I was like, wait, what if I just barely do anything in this game? What if I just stop trying and just play as passively as possible? And then nothing changed. Like, the game just kind of drifted onwards. And, like, I realized, oh, this entire thing was hollow. And this... none of this really works, and I basically invented this entire experience in my head because I was so bought into the hype and the premise. I'd read all these reviews. I'd read all of these you know, developer diaries and interviews, and so I was basically coming into this like bound and determined to have the time of my goddamn life, and it kind of blew up in my face. So that's probably the... most personally, like, that one's seared into my memory in a lot of ways. You know, it comes and goes. It happens less now that I do review a lot of this stuff. I've also gotten a lot more... It's not so much that you get more discriminating, but, like, as you get older, like with anything, those truly breathtaking, like, defining experiences just come, like, fewer and farther between because you have... yeah. Ever more context that you're taking in everything. And so, like, I just think after a certain point, hype itself starts becoming a little less effective on you just because, you know, you've been to that dance so many times.
Yeah, that's very fair. I have a happy example about this and a sad example about this. And I'll tell you the sad one first. I could not have been more excited in my life for the first GameCube Rogue Squadron game.
Okay.
Rogue Leader, I think, is the one. Came out like at GameCube launch, basically. Big Star Wars nerd, especially at that time. I mean, I guess I was like 17 at that time, so it was like not quite as full nerd, like wearing my special flight suit as I did when I played the Hoth levels in the N64 Shadows of the Empire, but like still super into Star Wars. And this was the first time I think I saw like almost DVD quality footage of Star Wars, because like when you played that disc, it would play like little clips from the movies. And it looked way better than my VHS tapes at that time. So, like, I would just play, like, the startup screen of this game. I would get so excited, so excited, so excited. And then I never beat, like, the third mission. It was just, I don't even think it was a bad game. I just don't think it
I thought people liked Rogue Squadron.
I think they did. I think they did. I don't think it was a bad game. I just sucked at it a lot. And it just wasn't fun for me. I was bad at it. So it was a little sad. I got hyped. I kept playing the, like, attract mode of that game, basically. I kept playing, like, the startup screen, and that was exciting, and I guess that was something for me, but man,
this is getting heartbreaking. What do you mean you were playing the startup screen?
I would put it on. I would watch the clips from the movies that played. The, like, 40 seconds of clips from the movies, I would play that, and I would just sit there and watch them.
Like, that was that's really bleak. Okay.
But I have a happy example, and it's a modern example. It's a recent example. It's not a game, but I was so down on Daredevil, especially season 2 of Daredevil, that I thought the Punisher was going to be the fattest turd somebody ever, Marvel ever shat out of its ass, and like...
That's called Iron Fist.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I haven't even touched that. and like, I loved it and thought it was nuanced and smart, and like, it made some missteps, but I loved it, and I just actually finished it like last week. So that was like an anti-hype for me. That one was the hype was so low that like, man, it just needed to have some action in it, and I would have been like, yeah, that's all I needed. All right, this guy seems mad at the world. Cool. All right, we got something. And yeah, it was actually pretty good. I think pretty good. One of my more higher tier Marvel experiences, in fact, which is kind of saying something, because I don't have the highest opinion of a lot of Marvel stuff. So shocked at the at my own lack of hype, and then enjoyed quite a bit. Anyway, all right, if we don't have any other examples, and if there's other examples, we can put those out there. Otherwise, I'm going to tell a story from a reader, and we'll wrap up. All right. I just love the image of this. And this, of course, just the last couple weeks on the Friday show, I've been doing a couple of those, like, stories about people playing their way, because the question bucket was full of those at one point, and I'm very amused by them. This is a brief and beautiful story from Thomas. Thomas writes, "My brother and I spent a surprising amount of time playing Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts. We never bothered with the actual objectives, but the first level had both a volcano and an ocean. And we would build increasingly elaborate vehicles designed only to transport whales from the ocean into the volcano. We referred to this as, quote, returning them to their natural habitat, unquote. And it was deeply amusing for reasons that are unknown to this day." Thomas. Thank you, Thomas, for that beautiful image. PETA has your number now, and you better watch out. I just love that stuff, though. I mean, like, when you make your own really doofy objectives and have a good time with the game, it makes me happy. It's how I play things sometimes. And that's very good. All right, we're probably a quicker cast today, but I'm okay with it because we've got to get ready. Since we're streaming all day, you're listening to this on a Friday, and we're streaming all day. And it's a lot.
Yeah, lots going on.
A lot. We've got a lot of exciting things. So stay tuned, of course, to our Twitch channel, Waypoint. Just Waypoint on Twitch. It's easy. As always, send questions to gaming@vice.com with the subject question. Shoutouts, as always, to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. We're on Twitter at Waypoint. We're on Facebook at Waypoint Vice. We're on YouTube at Waypoint Vice. And you can read everything that we do at waypoint.vice.com. Patrick, where can people find you on this fine internet?
Well, I might dispute that part, but at Patrick Klopik.
Perfect. Rob, where can we find you?
At Rob Zachney on Twitter.
Amazing. You can find me at Danielle RI and also sadly playing that Star Wars game into infinity. It'll be a beautiful day. Thank you so much, as always, for sticking with us. You can always listen to Waypoint Radio on Mondays and Fridays, and always catch us streaming every day, twice a day now, typically, at least, although today, for like 4 or 5 times, on Twitch. Thank you so much, everyone. Be good, and be good at it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.